Blog Talk Radio.
Could you give me pot and coffee?
All right. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am Angela Butler. Today, the interview is with Mr. Hashim Nzinga. He is the leader of the New Black Panthers. How are you doing, sir?
We're doing fine. Good to be on with you.
Oh, that's great.
Can you still hear me, Angie?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you for agreeing to come back on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
No problem. I'm always there for my people.
Yes, sir. As the leader of the New Black Panthers, the last time I interviewed you, I let everyone know that we would be doing a follow-up interview on you, sir, and the Black Panthers. The last time we talked, you were helping Ms. Stacey Arms. How do you feel about the way things turned out with the voter suppression?
Well, in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, the first time the African American got the vote in Atlanta, Georgia was 1868. And by 1869, on March 18th, after expelling all blacks from his legislation in September of 1868, Georgia now rejected the 15th Amendment of the Constitution under Governor Rufus Vailock. And as we know, and your audience should know, when you talk about the 15th Amendment in the Constitution, the 15th Amendment in the United States Constitution and each state, based on your race, color, or previous condition and servitude. But once blacks started voting in 1868, voter suppression came. And the governor just basically said they weren't going to respect the 15th Amendment. And so I said that to set the stage that our people have suffered enough through the Jim Crow laws, counting bubbles, counting soap bubbles, getting your house blew up, getting assassinated, Medgar Evers fell in his wife and children's arms after going out to register people to vote in Jackson, Mississippi, We have suffered. We have gave our life. We have been lynched. We have been blew up. Our children have been blew up. We have had dogs sicked on us. We have walked the mighty long mile. And in 2018, we shouldn't have any problems at voting polls. We shouldn't have any problems having the right to vote. It's just ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. And for a governor who's for a secretary of state to run for governor, why he's secretary of state in a state where he controls the voting polls, the voting machines, his office control all irregularly, all activities of voting in the state. It should almost be a conflict of interest for him to run for governor. He should have to quit and give up that seat years before he run for governor, because while he's in that seat, people are looking at us like we're the laughing stock of the world. You got a governor, I mean, a man running for governor who runs the election against his campaign opponent, I mean, against his opponent, and he controls, is he going to have voting machines in her district? He controls the absentee voting. He controls any complaints. All the complaints go to the Secretary of State. That means if you complain, you complain against the man you're running against. And we have seen with our own eyes in these southern states from Florida on up how these elections have been rigged and stolen before our eyes, and we're tired of it. So I feel terrible about it, absolutely terrible about it.
Understand that, sir. Understand that it's not good what's going on, especially with all that we as black people have went through in this country. And the only thing I can say about the lynchings, the bombings, the Black Wall Street, all those things that have happened, it's pure racism. But I also believe it's because there's not a lot of black people in this country.
Well,
that's why white supremacy does that. That's there's white privilege, white supremacy, because it's not a whole lot of blacks in this country.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And you know, the other issue with us marching was we had guns, and that was for a reason. And
you
some
have to
people
to protect yourselves.
Yeah, some people got conflicting stories about that, but
they don't say anything when the Ku Klux Klan has guns.
Not only that, you're right though. But not only that, you got to realize people who are not historians or don't study. You have to realize that the first black code law for slavery, first law in slavery, the first law they written on paper for slavery was that a slave couldn't have a weapon and couldn't have a gun. Why? Because when George Washington, who started and founded this so-called country, used that gun to equalize the playing field. And that's how he became president. That was a revolution. That was a rebellion. And they praised George Washington. And they got his picture at the White House and in every State Department and every congressman and every politician has George Washington's picture up. But George Washington was a revolutionary. He didn't believe that the British Empire respected the colonies. They were taking their money and not representing them for their taxes like they're doing us. And they were treating the colonies any kind of way. And if you didn't own land, you couldn't vote. The woman, you couldn't vote. And it was voter suppression.
Yes, sir.
So they tried every way to make a just society with this British Empire, having nothing to do with slavery. We were slaves and George owned slaves. This was white on white I'm talking about. And finally, the colonies got fed up. And they organized, and they said, either you're going to give us our rights or we're going to take our rights as human beings. And nobody talks bad about George Washington. You ain't going to get one white American one president to talk bad about George Washington. Most of the time, half the time they talking, George Washington is the biggest photo right behind their head. So long as the white man has been a revolutionary, as long as the white man is so-called fighting for his rights, then it's fine. But the other thing is, when you're a national chairman and the leader of an organization worldwide, and you're going to the streets and you're exposing yourself to danger and as many death threats as we get on this side that we don't even talk about, if George, Trump comes to town, he's going to have his Secret Service. If the British prince comes to town, he's going to have his Secret Service, or his Secret Service going to guard him in America, and he's going to have his own security. If any leader and most heads of states or whoever they are come to this country, they're going to bring their security, and the Secret Service going to protect them too. But they feel a black man is not important to his people, and he don't supposed to be protected. So them soldiers wasn't only there to just carry guns. We got people walking into Kroger shooting black people in the face. We got black people are hiring security for their churches because people are talking about coming in, blowing up their churches. Now, how I'm going to be the national leader of the New Black Panther Party, and out there walking, you understand? So it was for two things. Are you still there?
Yes, sir. I was asking, could you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. You know, it's just, we live in a time
that,
where people want to act like our suffering and our pain. Excuse me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I say we live in a time where people want to act like our suffering, our history, and our pain don't mean nothing to nobody. You understand? But in 1793, when a person of color entered the state of Georgia, they were required, this is 1793, they were required within 30 days to register themselves in the county they was in. If they didn't, they were put out, if they were a free slave. If they didn't, they was put out of the state of Georgia. You know, Georgia has a terrible memory when it comes to what they have done to other people. Right here in Georgia, in 1838, 16,000 Cherokee Indians were forced to migrate off of their land, the indigenous people's land, and go west. And we all know that was end up being called the Trails of Tears.
Yes, sir.
This is what this country does to people. And in 1840, there were only 6 free slaves in the state of Georgia. Well, in Atlanta. In 1840, there was only 6 free slaves in Atlanta. And there was 952 male slaves, 1,052 female slaves. You know, and the total population of Atlanta in 1850 was 2,569 slaves, and only 18 of them was free by 1850. And if I go down the history of Atlanta and Georgia and how we have suffered and how we have went through pure hell to get where we are, no white person, no white Klan and no white rebel flag waving person has the right to ask us why are we carrying out our constitutional rights. You know, when we know our history, they think we're just stupid, we're just talking. You know, for instance, 1859, May 20th, the city council ordered that free black posted bonds of $200 to live in Atlanta. In 1859, do you know how much $200 worth?
Yes,
if you didn't post a bond, like an insurance bond or whatever they wanted to call it, in 1859, May 20th, the city council passed a law where if you was a free black person living in Atlanta, you had to post a $200 bond. But at that same time, the total slave population in 1859 in Georgia, Atlanta, was 3,000, which was 25% of the population in Atlanta. You understand?
Yes,
so
sir.
What I'm trying to prove is when we get into this voting thing, when we start talking about this voting, we're not just fighting for us. We're fighting for our ancestors who died and who've been lynched and bodies were blew apart, and for school children have been bit by dogs and humiliated for us to have these rights. So now we have these rights, ain't nobody gonna take them back, because we have to really understand that we are in a world that if you don't make people respect your rights and who you are, they'll go back in history and take your rights right before your eyes.
Yes, and they will.
And then by 1870 in Atlanta, Negro population totaled 9,929, which was 25% of the population. The reason I keep reading these figures as the years go on is we're growing and we're getting bigger. And as we get bigger, by 1890, the Atlanta population was 28,098 was African Americans. That's 42% of the city. So what I'm saying, that keeps growing. So now we begin to balance out and have the majority in certain areas. That's voting power. As we keep growing, as the years go by, and we keep growing, and we keep fighting racism, we keep growing. And eventually, it was over 50,000 African Americans in Georgia by 1905. And President Roosevelt had the knowledge that the South had one of the largest black populations. So now we got that population, and those people we're talking about when we mentioned 1905 and 1800s, we know they went through pure hell. We know what they went through. We know what we're talking about. By 1920, there was 62,796 African Americans in Atlanta. We were 31% of the population. You understand? And the population
we're growing. We're growing, and I believe the census count is wrong.
And the population was 200,000, but we were officially 62,000. So what I'm saying, if there was voter suppression in the Atlanta area, in the DeKalb area, DeKalb got 1.2 million people. That's the second richest black population in America. Them are voting people. And at least 92% of them are black. So if there was not enough voting machines in that area, if there was a voter suppression in that area based on driving license, ID, doing it different in that area, and there was complaints, then they should have been handled, because these are the votes that Stacey was looking for to take her over the top in these areas. You understand?
Yes, sir.
In 1955. 24,888 African Americans registered to vote. In 1955, 24,888 African Americans registered to vote through pure hell. And Ford Magazine at that time named Auburn Avenue the richest Negro street in the world. And the reason I mentioned Auburn Avenue became like Black Wall Street, and that's where, in 1957, Dr. King would start the Southern, the SCLC on Auburn Avenue, and that's where a lot of the planning of voting and a lot of our strategies took place. And I'm just trying to let your listening audience know we don't care about no one time or them talking about why are the Panthers bagging Stacey Abrams. Why are the Panthers walking down the street with guns? We're walking down the street with guns because we need to be protected by constitutional right. We vote for Stacey Abrams because people have died for us to have a choice who we want to represent us. And you don't ask me why I vote for no damn body. That's why when you used to vote, you used to go in a place and close the curtain. That's your business who you vote for. That's the beauty about this country. If they ever let it work like it's supposed to work, but they want to control who you vote for.
To keep white supremacy ahead of everything. That's why there's so many black men and women in prison also, and that's why they're killing the younger black men and older ones too. That's why. He controls white supremacy. And some whites really do hate black people. When I did the show about them deliberately infecting black people with HIV in Africa. Sudan, Africa is where it started. And they went way to Africa. Left America and came over here, and the British, the English, went to Africa, excuse me, sir, and infected them with HIV. And I don't believe in the Big Bang Theory. They also infected homosexuals, men. And that show is about that, in a way, the Big Bang Theory show, the Big Bang show. It said all came together with with a monkey, contaminated needles and blood, and it all came together in a big bang, and that's how HIV was created. It's been proven that they made that in a lab in Washington, D.C.
Well, anybody that we have to convince certain things to at this point in history with the internet and Google and all the different ways that we can find out stuff in 5 seconds, as we're on this show talking. The reason I talk nothing but facts is because as we're talking, people could just be on their phone listening to this show, Googling what I'm saying. And I want them to Google it, and I want them to see it's true. And the whole conversation so far has been about why it was so important for these early votes, the mail-in votes, and all of these votes to be counted from certain areas. And the numbers I'm getting to and keep growing, I only got to 1950s. I ain't got to the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, and now almost 2019. So you imagine the population of voters in these areas now. I just said that DeKalb County got 1,000,002, and 92% of that is black people in DeKalb County. You better believe 35 to 45% of those people are registered voters. But in DeKalb County, we had lines so long, wrapped around poles, looking like we voted for Nelson Mandela in South Africa. Then we find out that there's 700 voting machines in a warehouse that the Secretary of State didn't send out.
I just know that the laws that are being made, the different laws from the states and in Washington, D.C., are meant to hurt black people. Ignore black people's rights, ignore that black people have rights.
There's no doubt about that. If you just look at how hard we work with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad and Attorney Malik Yousafzai on the hate crime bill after James Byrd incident in the 90s.
Mr. Byrd. Yes, sir. Then, Mr. James Byrd Jr. Yes, sir.
And then after Megan Williams was abducted in a trailer house in West Virginia, and we worked that case, which was a hate crime, 9 basically West Virginia skinheads kidnapped her, raped her, cut her hair, stabbed her, and was leaving her to bleed like a hog, and somebody found her. And then right after that, on the 10th year anniversary of James Byrd dragging, they drug a brother that was from the military named Anthony Hill in Newberry, North South Carolina, and we went down and handled that case, and we fought hard to get the hate crime bill on the books. Soon as we finally got the hate crime laws on the books, they turn around and use it to protect blacks. I mean, use it, turn around and use it to protect the white population. And it's hard as hell to get them to use the hate crime bill on all these police killings and all this abuse that's happened to black people. Then we sit there and watch them legislate Stand Your Ground. But soon as Stand Your Ground get on the book, black people have been getting shot, hung, beat, threatened, lynched for 450 years in this country. And soon as a bill come up that it looks good for us, where we can stand our ground against some of this racism, all the standing ground cases damn near that worked on white people we had. So you're right. Every time we do get some legislation in place, they reverse it and use it against us.
That is true. About Stand Your Ground is true about America. America is known for what it is.
But right now we got a serious problem because these police assassinations, these police are just they ain't at war. They are doing what they've been doing. I was watching different movies and documentaries of slavery in Georgia and 12 years of slavery and just different slave pictures. They don't look no different from today. Legislation is passed. White people get mad, put a sheet over their head. Some of them the same senators who, and the same congressmen and the same mayors and city councilmen who tried to vote against a bill that was passed. And the bill passed, they just put sheets on and get on their horses and go intimidate everybody and kill everybody who's trying to enjoy the legislation that's been passed. And they just run up on black people, lynch them, run up on black people, burn them at stake, run up on black people, beat them to death. And it's the same thing with these white racist skinheads and Klan police are doing. They all run and join the police forces, and they all run to these penitentiaries and become guards, for they can beat on black people and kill black people as they wish. The only difference is they doing it with our taxpaying money. Like a mall in Alabama, a young man is from the military, an engineer in the military, which means something, because some people in the military, they just go for the ride. But when you're in the military and you're an engineer, you done moved up in rank. And his father is a police officer. He in a mall in Alabama, and a fight break out, and two people were shot, and unfortunately, a baby was hit with a stray bullet. The police get there, and they just go to shoot at any black person in the damn mall.
Lord have mercy. Basically. Yes.
And they killed this young man, and then they put out they got the shooter. Then this morning they had to come out and say he wasn't a shooter. He was an ex-military engineer. His father is a police. He's a good kid, doing the right thing. He was trying to break up the fight, but he's dead this morning, laying in the mall in a puddle of blood because the way these police are shooting us down, like we're finna end again.
Well, back to William King and Mr. James Byrd Jr., the drive-by truck by lynching. Would you like to talk about that some and how are you calling for people?
We got 90 seconds. Do we got more than 90 seconds?
Yes, sir, we do.
Okay, good. Well, let's just break it down for our listening audience who might not remember after all these years. James Byrd Jr., an African-American man who was 49 years old, was walking home in Jasper, Texas. And Sharon Berry, Lawrence Russell Brewer, and John William King came up in a pickup truck and offered him a ride home. And when they did that, he took the ride because he knew these guys. Somewhere on that ride, they decided to pull over and lynched his brother and basically put a chain around his feet and drug him for some 4 or 5 miles at over sometimes speeds over 90 miles an hour, which tore his body in pieces and parts and left his body parts up and down the highway and left Mary Burnett, Betty Bostner, Coretta Bird, LaVon Harris, which was his sisters and brothers. They left James Bird Sr. and Stella Bird, who are both deceased now, without a son.
Boy,
and,
his body parts are scattered everywhere. I've seen the documentary for Mr. Jason. And from Mr. Dick Gregory, who's deceased. I've had lynchings in my family, but nothing like that.
Well, let me tell you this. The mayor, R.C. Horn, which was black, had just got in office. He died in 2016. But let's just keep the people on what went on. What went on, it got so big and it blew up on such a national level that it was such a horrific crime that it couldn't be ignored. It couldn't be swept under the carpet, as we say. And eventually, the right thing happened with a lot of pressure from the New Black Panther Party and others. The DA charged these guys with capital murder, and the system that took place after that was well monitored from the President of the United States all the way down to the local liquor store owner. So there was no way out for these guys because Sean Berry, who was 23 years old when it happened, he's 42 now, he told on the other guys. And when he told on them, it pretty well wrapped up their fate. But it got Sean Berry life in prison. Like I said, he was 23 when it happened. Now he's 42. And what the other two people got was the death penalty, and which they deserved. And Brewer, Lawrence Russell Brewer, he was 31 years old when it happened. And he was executed September 21st by lethal injection, 2011, right about 11 or 12 years after the incident. And Russell died at 44 years old. But when they brought him in, they give you your last words. Brewer's last words was, "I feel no remorse, and we'll do it all over again." That was his last words. And people got to understand that King and Brewer had met in penitentiary and was known skinheads or clan or whatever you want to call it. They had already had a relationship in prison. So Lawrence Russell Brewer, he gets executed in 2011 for the murder of Brother James Byrd. Sean Berry gets a life sentence with no chance of parole. And for some reason,
and this is in Texas,
John William King, because of his political family and his lawyers, Richard Ellis, Haiti Cripps, and Brock Jones, kept him living 20 years. And most appeals are done after about 10 years. So in August of this year, John William King, who was 23 years old when it happened, he's 42 years old now. He was denied his last appeal in the Fifth Circuit Court in New Orleans. But since this man killed James Byrd, his leading attorney died in June. Both Byrd's mother and father have died. The mayor, who we talked about earlier, our brother R.C. Horn, died in 2016. This man, everybody who prosecuted this man or had something to do with it, then died. He's still living. We had a 20-year anniversary of this thing, you know. And then they did a movie called Jasper, Texas, and they got Lou Gossett Jr. to play the mayor. So the world knows what this boy did, and he still got to sit around and get all these appeals because of white privilege. And he still feel the same way at 42 that he felt at 23 with no remorse for Jane Bird or his family or what he did.
Yes,
so
sir.
I'll be glad.
But he doesn't want to be executed.
Huh?
He doesn't feel like he did anything wrong on William King.
Well, they better be glad they didn't let him go free because he would have been executed a lot earlier.
That was a horrible murder. Are you calling for anyone to be there at the hearing when the date is set and at the execution itself?
Well, when the date is set, we're calling because of our long history and involvement to this. People are always talking about closure. Family need closure. Well, the community and the people who fought hard for justice need closure, too. So we're calling on the New Black Panther Party, National Minister of Information, to put out the call that all the Panther chapters from all over the country be there. And we're calling all the Panther supporters, and we got a big group of supporters and friends to be there because we want to make sure it gets done and we can put this behind us and then go right across the street and start on the next one because it's still going on as we speak.
More lynchings are going on?
Every day.
Yes, every day in Texas, everywhere. I know
all
it is. I know there's still lynching all over the country. And it's sickening.
Yeah, they just lynched. They just physically lynched a boy and a young man in St. Louis, whose mother I know real good. She's a revolutionary, and she finds her son lynched with a rope. Young man is very intelligent, very articulate, had it going on, but all of a sudden he wants to commit suicide. That just as crazy as when you watch South African and movies like Steve Biko, and they run a list of maybe 3,000 Africans that got killed in jail, and all of them hung themselves and committed suicide, fell down some stairs by accident, fell off a chair and broke his neck. You know, just think we're damn buffoons of the world. You're like, Mike, you can feed us anything. No, we ain't going for this no more. What's going on is in the Constitution of the United States, and we're talking about police now, because police are the biggest danger to black people. They got black people pissing in their pants just to go down to Walmart and get some butter and come back home. We ain't going to be living like that. People that we're playing to protect us, we have to run around like this. And this is what I'm tired of this society playing on. They have mayors who have been indicted and who are in jail as I speak. They have city councilmen who have been indicted for corruption or in jail as I speak. They have preachers who have been indicted and are in jail as I speak. They have teachers who have been indicted and who are in jail as I speak. They have politicians in the White House who have been indicted or are taking pleas right now, and others are going to be going to jail in the political arena for corruption. They have businessmen on Wall Street and bankers are being indicted every day for corruption. So on all levels, from the school to the church to the White House, we find corruption in different organizations, but for some reason, ain't no way police can be corrupt. And the police are the gatekeepers of corruption. Why do you say that, Arshin? Because I done worked the New Black Panther Party having its 30-year anniversary next year. Not 3 years, not 2 years, 30-year. We're no longer an organization. Organizations come and go. The New Black Panther Party is an institution. Once you last 30 years of doing what we do, you are an institution. That means you done came up with the proper protocol.
I have a question for you, sir. Mr. Hutchin, do you get nervous because the history of the, so many Black Panthers have been sent to prison. Does it?
We were in Riverside, California, with my teacher, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad, was doing a lecture at Riverside in Riverside, California. The only thing I can say is like this. That day in Riverside, that was in May 29th, 1994, a brother named James Best came up and shot the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad and five of us. And once I looked over and saw that 9mm pop off, maybe 8 or 9 shots from an arm length distance, it felt. And God protected us through that. I lost fear that day. I'm not nervous about jail. I'm not nervous about death threats.
I know you get I'm
only nervous about one thing, and it's what Dr. King said, who the FBI, by the way, made him the most dangerous man alive, and he used the Gundy technique of nonviolence, but still stupid-ass, gay-ass J. Edgar Hoover gonna make him the most dangerous man in America, and nobody said one thing about it. It's a shame what these people do when they get in position and abuse these positions and become gangsters, and we just let them get away with it. That represent us and our tax money and our this Constitution. But what I was saying is, the only thing I fear is Dr. King say silence is a sign of betrayal. And so when you get to hiding under the bed and hiding in the closet and trying to be so safe, and I don't want to say this and I don't want to say this, the Bible say the truth shall set you free. So I just make sure what I'm saying is truthful, factual, and I'm free. And
yes,
I'm not
sir.
Betraying my people because I'm not being silent under no condition. Dead
no,
or alive,
sir, you're not. And
I'm going to win. And
my mother was active in the Black Panthers, so I understand you. My mom's very intelligent, educated, but she was a Black Panther. And many people hope she's on the wall of tolerance in Montgomery, Alabama. The Southern Poverty Law Center, her name is. For her civil rights.
Stop right there. Stop right there. See, that's what damn fools our people are. Every time they say something about me, somebody posts that, well, the Southern Poverty such and such group said Hashim and Zinga is a terrorist and this and that.
Yes,
well, listen to what you just
said.
That's
not true. You do great things.
But hold on. But look at what we just said. And then do the research. We just said Dr. King's biggest job during the Civil Rights Movement was in what they call Birmingham, Alabama. They nicknamed it Birmingham because our people from the church on the 16th Street Baptist Church to house after house was getting bombed. Bull Connor, the governor at that time of Alabama, all of them Southerners in Birmingham and these southern places in Alabama, the Selma Bridge, where we were attacked, and John Lewis and others almost sacrificed their life, and some did sacrifice their life. And the Montgomery bus boycott.
Yes, sir.
So how in the hell, how in the hell you going to let some southern crackers who done put you through pure hell for 450 years, who was the biggest wall between your freedom, organize a group and tell you you're a terrorist, but if you look at who's on the Southern Poverty staff and you look at their history and you follow their history, some of their daddies planted them bombs in them churches. Some of their daddies, and then some of their mamas spit in white people's face. And then you're going to let them set up a little organization and call it the Southern Poverty, and then they get to just slander people's names. That's fine. That's what crackers do. But black people don't supposed to believe and fall for that crap. Once they say Southern Poverty, you know to leave it.